And stay tuned now for Air Cascadia with Chris Andre.
Thank you.
This is KBOO Portland. Air Cascadia is off today. We're going to be going straight into Flashpoints in just a moment. In the meantime, this.
Native American Business Network is holding its 12th annual Trading at the River Conference and Native Marketplace at Lewis and Clark College, May 27th through the 29th. ONABEN is a nonprofit public benefit corporation created by Northwest Tribes to increase the success of private businesses owned by Native Americans. Trading at the River features inspirational speakers, informative panels, and valuable workshops for small business owners and economic development organizations. ONABEN also welcomes community members to come check out the Native Marketplace, a highlight of the event, which features over 20 Native vendors. It is open to the public from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., May 29th at Lewis and Clark College at Smith Hall. More information about this KBOOT-sponsored event may be found on kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
May 30th, the UV746 and KBOO Community Radio hosts the inaugural broadcast of the STEAM Radio Syndicate. From 8 p.m. to midnight, the STEAM Radio Syndicate presents a four-hour extravaganza of sounds and stories, all broadcast live from the decks, holds, causeways, and crevices of the 150-foot steamship. Over 50 artists will be part of this live multimedia soundscape with slam poetry, fiction, oral histories, found sound, and live bands. Tune in to 90.7 FM or kboo.fm and listen May 30th from 8 p.m. to midnight, only on KBOO Portland.
I am a tugboat sailing on the water, doing a million things or more.
May 31st at the Star Theater, join Green Empowerment and 300 sustainability movers and shakers for the second annual Passport to Empowerment benefit party to raise money for renewable energy and water projects in remote villages. DJ Anjali, Love Bomb Go-Go, and their 17-piece marching band, Filipino tinikling stick dancers, an airless performance, and food and cocktails from Nicaragua, Philippines, and Malaysia. Tickets are available at greenempowerment.org/passport. Passport to Empowerment is May 31st at the Star Theater. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Flashpoints, in a scene reminiscent of early AIDS ACT UP protests, hundreds of very sick folks suffering from Lyme disease surround and close down the Infectious Disease Society for America. And Oliver Stone, in his new multi-part series, Untold History of the U.S., delves into the Cold War. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Back in January of this year, here at Flashpoints, we started doing a multi-part series about Lyme disease, in which we began by looking at the parallels between the AIDS epidemic and the Lyme epidemic. Well, today we're going to be talking to a Lyme disease activist, Josh Cutler, who is on the front lines in an ACT-UP style protest with hundreds of Lyme patients who have stormed the headquarters of the Infectious Disease Society of America, or IDSA. And I'm Dennis Bernstein. Again, you're listening to Flashpoints. Apparently, Josh, patients have besieged the building and had it completely surrounded today. This is part of a two-day protest. You were there. Set the scene. What was going on? Why did people gather?
Okay, well, pretty much we've been, the May Day Project, who I represent, I'm the committee chair for, we've been planning a protest at the IDSA on and off for the past 4 years, but we have been protesting in D.C. The IDSA holds a set of guidelines that pretty much prevent Lyme patients from being accepted as a persistent infection. They pretty much tell us that if we're sick past the 4 weeks of doxycycline, which is the standard treatment for Lyme disease, that it's either post-Lyme syndrome, meaning there's no active infection, or it's in our head. Hundreds of thousands of patients would disagree with that, as would science. Multiple years and efforts have gone on Capitol Hill to try and have these guidelines, you know, reversed. We haven't really had any success with that avenue. So pretty much we've done exactly, you know, what we've seen in previous protests with people, you know, that, you know, when the AIDS epidemic hit the United States. Now with Lyme disease being the fastest and growing infectious disease in the country, surpassing AIDS, it's a national epidemic that's going largely unnoticed. So protesting them, we're trying to get them to overturn the guidelines so that chronic Lyme or the persistent Borrelia infection is accepted. One, so insurance will cover treatment, so patients aren't spending $60,000 to $70,000 a year on IV antibiotics. And this will open the door to prompt research for a cure, and just research in general with other tick-borne diseases, which generally most who contract Lyme disease will end up with more than just Lyme. Oh, so
go on.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, describe, if you could, what happened today. What did it look like? What was the event like?
Today we had Lyme patients from all over the country. We're in right outside of Washington, D.C. in Arlington, Virginia at the IDSA headquarters. We had their building completely surrounded with Lyme patients from all over the country, people in wheelchairs, people with PICC lines that they're basically IV ports that go straight into their heart. You know, people with walkers all surrounding their building, very sick people from California, New York, Wisconsin, all over the continental United States, have flown in to basically protest these guidelines and tried to promote change. So we were around their building all day, you know, holding signs, banners, protesting, chanting. We had a billboard truck circling and parking in front of their building, you know, with the message that we're trying to convey, that they are killing Lyme patients. And while the message sounds extreme, it is the reason that we started the May Day Project. I lost a very good friend to Lyme disease, and with meeting with the other couple of people that had the same vision, we came together, and that's how we got there. The scene today, it was grim. There's a lot of patients. We had several people black out on site, and just from the heat, everybody there is sick and currently battling Lyme disease. We did shut down the IDSA for the day. They shut down their phone, their social media pages. They blocked from anybody commenting, their fax lines.
Really? They blocked out all comments from their fax lines, and they shut down in response to this protest?
Yeah. Yeah, on top of us assaulting them from just being in front of their buildings, we live-streamed the entire event to the entire internet, and we'll be doing the same thing tomorrow. The link will be up on the MayDayProject.org. But we encourage people to continue to call and share their stories, facts, and the science-based documents that we've provided them with, and basically hit their social media pages with truth, with science, and ask them why they're denying us. And after we relentlessly hit them today, they pretty much shut down. Their employees weren't able to leave the building except through the garage, where we could not get access. They had security at every access point. Later on in the day, the man in charge of security for the building came up to me and said that someone from the IDSA would be willing to speak with one person behind closed doors with no media. They would not come out in front of the building due to all the news cameras and stuff. So I did. I went behind closed doors. I provided them with our evidence. And
who did you speak with?
The three individuals that came downstairs to meet me would not give me their name or title.
They wouldn't give you their name or title. They came down and they met with you anonymously?
That's correct. They just represented themselves as individuals from the IDSA. I reached out and shaked each one of their hands, you know, introducing myself, but they did not introduce themselves back. I didn't try to press the issue. I was just happy that we'd gotten inside and, you know, we were able to openly have dialogue with them. So we gave that to them, and I just asked them kindly that, you know, that they would review the guidelines and that we're demanding that they be changed, that there's patients out here that are dying. And one of the ladies, you could see compassion in her eyes. You know, you clearly see people in wheelchairs with IV poles hooked up to their arm. You know, if you don't have a heart, I don't understand how you couldn't feel that. My guess is that these are probably media contacts for the IDSA. I don't believe they were doctors or scientists. But what we're hoping is that they will review our information that we provided them with, and we're going to try and have a doctor and scientist tomorrow on site that will be willing to engage in dialogue with them.
Why do you think the Infectious Disease Society of America, that's the IDSA, why do they seem so hell-bent on not recognizing the chronic long-term impacts of Lyme, given the fact, for instance, that it was released, I guess, by the CDC, that instead of the 30,000 person a year increase, it's 300,000 a year, and that's low.
Yeah, those are definitely generous.
What's the problem with the IDSA?
I, my belief, and this is my personal belief and my colleagues, is you have a lot of old blood that are in there that have a lot of pride. Several of the board members that are on the IDSA have actually written, I believe one of them is writing a book. I don't know the title of it, but basically calling us Lyme lunatics, that, you know, we either have chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia, that it's in our head, and there is no clinical proof for a chronic form or infection of Lyme disease, which, I mean, the hundreds of thousands of patients, you know, without looking under a microscope, you know, you don't get these many people that are persistently sick and dying and continuing to get worse if nothing's there. And these are all patients that have, you know, that have gone through Lyme treatment. So the CDC had a really big conference call today with the people were able to dial in the public. And it was with four professors from major universities all studying persistent Lyme disease and the infection in animals. And basically the conclusion that the CDC came to is that the medical community as a whole really knows absolutely nothing at all about Lyme disease. And I tried to point the IDSA in that way. So as far as why they don't, you know, why they're not accepting this, I know there's a lot of pride on the line, and, you know, there is not, you know, there's definitely evidence for chronic Lyme, but I mean, if they're not actively researching, then, you know, I really don't know. I mean, infectious disease is what they're supposed to be specialized in. But, I mean, with Lyme disease being the issue it is and the awareness that they're giving it, which is next to nil, I mean, I really can't speak as to why their ignorance on the subject continues to be massive. We're hoping, like I said.
And you're going to be back there tomorrow. Let me tell people, I'm speaking with Josh Cutler. He's part of a group that has essentially adopted some of the same techniques as ACT UP in the battle to call attention to a continually growing Lyme disease epidemic, which has many chronic aspects. But the crucial organization, institution, Infectious Disease Society of America, IDSA, refuses to acknowledge this and makes it much more difficult or almost impossible for people to get the help they need, to afford the help they need, for there to be the research that needs to be done. You said, Josh, that one of the motivating forces was that you lost a friend. Can you just tell us a little bit about your friend and how that person died?
Yeah, my friend Erin Spillers, she was 32 years old. It was about 4 years ago. We'd become really good friends. I contracted Lyme disease, and she had led me pretty much to a lot of the good doctors that I've been able to see and gave me a lot of the knowledge that I've gained in the Lyme disease realm. And she was on IV antibiotics, and she was having cardiac issues, and she had a promising career. She was in school. I mean, everything was great, and Lyme disease brought her life crashing down, as did it mine. So we both had a lot to relate on the professional level. I was a network engineer prior to being sick, and now I'm on disability. So it really belittles who you become as a person when you get sick. So we related a lot, and, you know, at later in life, she, you know, she just kept continuing going downhill. And even with treatment costing her close to $70,000 a year, she was able to maintain it. But in the end, unfortunately, she died of heart failure. And it's a very common thing. I've met many, many, many people in their 20s and 30s that have pacemakers. So it's very, I don't think people realize the impact of Lyme disease. They think, oh, it's just joint issues and, you know, some aches and pains. But in all reality, it's a multi-systematic disease that can affect every part of your body, central nervous system, you know, your heart. I mean, just multiple things. So in the end, you know, she became very, very, very ill, and her parents found her in a room, you know, in cardiac arrest, and they weren't able to revive her. So that, for me, was a motivating factor between being sick and, you know, myself having kids and a family, to try and find a way that, you know, that we can get our health back, because we do have antibiotics, but it's not a cure. It's a lot of money, and it's a hope. So that was, you know, like I said, the main motivating factor for me. And we've lost multiple friends, you know, to this disease throughout the years, just as we continue to meet people through advocacy.
And so this has really impacted on every aspect of your life.
Yeah, every single aspect of it. Prior to being sick, you know, I said I was a senior engineer for the federal government. You know, me and my wife really didn't worry about bills. Had a nice house. I was only 26, and things came crashing down pretty quick. I went undiagnosed for 2 years, lost my career, lost my clearance with the government, lost my house, and ended up in my wife's parents' basement, sick in a bed, sleeping 19 hours a day. Fumbling for a doctor that would find out what was wrong with me. So, and unfortunately, my case and my story is not, you know, uncommon. That is the commonplace of people that have chronic Lyme.
If people want to find out more about the motivating force behind the protests, maybe they're in the Washington, D.C. area, they might want to show up if they're interested. How is the best way possible? Maybe people listening to this broadcast are not well. How's the best...